I'm Colin from Blackjack Apprenticeship, and I'm joined by Anthony Curtis. Anthony is a former professional card counter and blackjack tournament expert. He then parlayed his gambling success into starting both the Las Vegas Advisor and Huntington Press, the number one publisher for professional gambling books. Anthony is also a winner of the prestigious Blackjack Ball Tournament and a member of the Blackjack Hall of Fame. Anthony, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here, man.
You were just on 60 Minutes. Can you tell us what the story was there?
Yeah, but before I do, let me make the point that being on 60 Minutes is nothing like being here on this podcast. You know, this is the one I've been sweating about and thinking about.
Actually,
the 60 Minutes thing was like, ooh, wow. But it was about the MGM hack. They called me up. You know, I asked them. I said, why are you calling me? I said, you know, I don't have anything to do with the hack. I'm not a hacker. I'm not a coder. You know, they said, no, we just want, you know, some Vegas information. We want background. And we did a little talking on the phone. They're like, yep, you know, we want you on. And I happened to be there at Aria that night, the night it hit. I was eating dinner with Previn Mancotti. Some guys know who he is. Card counter from way back, Advantage player extraordinaire. That was what it was about. And they wanted to talk to me in general just about Vegas and how it affected MGM and, you know, that kind of background.
So there were two hacks. There was MGM and there was Caesars.
Yes.
And Caesars paid the ransom, but MGM did not. Any idea why they each chose the decision they did?
Well, you know, that was part of the discussion. Now, the funny thing is everybody's saying, yeah, I saw you on 60 Minutes. And I go, well, from now on, that'll be known as 1 minute. You know, because that was me. I was on for 1 minute. The actual interview went about close to 90 minutes. So back to your question, that was one of the things we discussed is why would they do it? And, you know, I got into a lot of the stuff that I talked about that didn't make air because they don't have enough time was sort of EV related. And I said, you know, they both did their calculations and made a decision. And MGM took to heart what the feds said. You know, FBI says, don't give it to them, don't give it to them. That's their party line. Caesar said, fooey on you, we're going to give it to them. And they're like, well, what would you have done? What do you think? Who is right? I go, well, let's see, $15 million. Ransom, $115 million in damages. So really, when you look at the bottom line, Caesars, by capitulating, probably, you know, did the right thing when you look at it that way.
Do you think by paying the ransom, Caesars set a bad precedent?
Well, that's the argument. You know, that's the whole argument about the thing, is that you can't keep paying because they're going to keep doing it. But, you know, they're going to keep doing it anyway. And you're in that position. I'm not sure what you're supposed to do. You know, the other point I made, and this kind of did make air. A part of that conversation made air in the two or three lines that I had. But I said, these guys were very much, not that I'm, you know, supporting them, not that I'm envious of them. I am envious of their skills. But I said, it's much like Advantage players in gambling, that the people who are perpetrating it are better than the people who are trying to stop it. And I said, you know, that's what we find out a lot, is the players are better than security. And in this case, the hackers were better than the cybersecurity.
I don't know if you saw this, but MGM just sued the FTC.
Saw that.
To block the probe into the impact of the data security of the hack. Why do you think they're suing to stop it?
I thought about that, and I have no idea. I really don't know. I think that somehow they feel that it will shine a bad light on them somehow, you know, for what they were able. I think if I had to make one guess, I would say that the level of the incursion was so great that you got to wonder what kind of fools were behind this. And I think they don't want to look bad. That's my guess.
Interesting.
Speculation.
I wonder, this is total speculation too, but if MGM has more data on people than they're supposed to.
There's a very good chance of that. You know, I mean, you know, you hear about all these things all the time. Go back to like Tom Brady with his cell phone. And Tom Brady didn't want anybody listening to his cell phone. Why? Because you don't know what's on there, right? And I mean, same thing. They don't want anybody looking into the damage is done. Let's get past it. And let's not let people, you know, see us with our pants down, right?
Any idea what the hackers would want with the information? Or was it just simply to get a ransom?
Well, a lot of it, you know, that I gleaned from talking to other people was that the ransom is paramount. You know, they want to get paid. That's it. They want to get paid. The other thing is they want to have the data. They can do stuff with data. And what they actually do with that data, you know, I'm not sure. And that's what's interesting is because MGM did not pay off. So they still have data. So are they going to come back and is that data going to end up out there and there are going to be more lawsuits and more and more and more? You know, this may not be over for MGM. not that I'm crying for them, you know, part of the evil empire, you know, MGM, Caesars.
Yeah.
Station, you know, I mean, you know, yeah. These guys, they're not my buds, but they're in a tough spot.
Well, and even Caesars, they paid, but how do they know that the hackers don't still sell their data to the black market?
That's the other thing. That's a big quandary. You know, I mean, they've still got the stuff, right?
Yeah.
So are there honor among thieves? You know, I don't know. I doubt it. You know, what comes out about all this, though, is these hackers, they're like kids. I mean, there are some of them as young as 12 and 13 years old, I think, and almost all of them in the scattered spider group, which was the U.S. component, mm-hmm. are all under 21. You know, they are 21 or under. They're just teenagers.
Wow.
You know, and they hook up with the black cat guys, you know, black cat in Russia, who knows how to orchestrate this stuff. And these are just little kids being led by the nose and like, you know, show us your stuff.
Wow.
Amazing.
Any idea how this ends up affecting Vegas or gambling in general?
Well, it's affecting gambling. I mean, the casinos everywhere. It's not going to affect us. You know, it's not going to affect the players. It affected things when the people who were there at that time, they couldn't get into their rooms. They couldn't get out of the parking garages. You know, everything was down. You know, you couldn't use credit cards. Everything was cash. None of the people couldn't cash out. They couldn't get their Tito tickets out. So people who are gamblers, you know, regular, the customers, the normal gamblers are going to be affected more than anybody on that. But the casino industry, very much affected. You know, there have been others under the radar, not been talked about already since the MGM hack. I've heard of two or three others across the country, smaller casinos that have been shut down for weeks.
So what are casinos doing in response?
Well, they're trying to beef up their security, yeah. But they're just so far behind. Anyway, so that was a big 60 Minutes deal, and it was cool. The funny thing at the end of it is just, I don't know where, they asked me to do a card counting demonstration. And they're filming everything, you know? And I'm like, yeah, sure, give me a deck. And, you know, so I did it. And it felt good. Felt like I had everything covered, right? But I told them, I said, before you air this, if you air this anywhere, I go, I want to look at it.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I didn't get something transposed backwards, something, you know, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be really easy to say something. We went to Penn and Teller last night, me and my buddy helping us film here. And, you know, Penn Jillette said things backwards a few times on accident. Maybe he caught himself or maybe he didn't, because that's just, right. It's just very natural. And I was telling you that before we were airing that.
Right.
And you said that you had a story. You sat next to...
Oh, you want to hear my Penn Jillette story?
I do. I want to hear it.
This is back, I don't know, man, 15, 20 years ago. And I used to do a lot of traveling between LA and Vegas. So I'm getting on a plane. I'm getting on Southwest. And on Southwest, it's all, you know, open boarding. And I'm late as usual. And I'm, you know, I'm running and I just make it. I've had, I don't know, two or three Heinekens with the boys on the way out going, you know, I'm going to LA for business and pleasure. Let's have a couple beers, that kind of thing. Get on the plane. I'm the last one. It's full. There's one seat, middle seat. Some guy over here on the window and Penn Jillette on the aisle. And I look all around. I'm like, I don't want to sit next to that guy. You know, I don't know why, but I'm just like, I don't want to. I'm looking around. There's no, and the stewardess comes over. She goes, sir, have a seat. You know, she goes, you're the last one on the plane. So I sit down next to Penn and I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to say anything to him. I'm not going to be that guy, right? I'm not going to be that guy. I'm not going to talk to him. I don't care. I'm not going to talk to him. And so we take off. I order another Heineken, right? This is another short flight, right? Short flight just to LA. And Penn reaches down into his, like his sock or, you know, like a sock pocket or something. And he pulls out a deck of cards. And he starts going through his moves. Boom, boom, boom. He's doing his moves. And I'm drinking the Heineken, and I'm thinking, hell with it, right? So finally I go, you know, I've watched a lot and everything else, and he doesn't look up. He just keeps going. I said, you know, you're really great with cards and everything else. I said, you ever get into card counting in any way? Keeps going. Doesn't acknowledge. Doesn't, like, nobody was there. Nobody said anything to him. Goes for about 15 seconds, and I'm starting to stew. Now I'm really mad. Not at him. I'm mad at me. Right? Because I'm like, don't talk to this guy, right? These Hollywood, you know, prima donnas do not. All of a sudden, he's done, and it's probably 20 seconds. And I just keep looking at him because I'm pissed, right? And he puts the cards down, and he puts his big pen head in my face real close, and he goes, doesn't work, and goes back to his cards. Right? He just screams at me. He goes, doesn't work.
No way.
Boom, boom, boom. And I go, yeah, it does. I go, what are you talking about? It doesn't work. I go, where does that come from? And now he's engaged, right? He goes, look, what's your edge? when you're playing blackjack, when you're counting cards, what's your edge? 0.5%, 2%? I go, 0.75% maybe. He goes, that's my point. He goes, why would I play a game at 0.75% when I can put my money in the stock market and get 11 to 12% annual? I said, annual.
Yeah.
I go one time, right? 10 to 12%. I said, how about 0.75%? How about 0.5%? Again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Compounded with winnings, compounded again, and again, and again, and again. And I'm doing this. And I'm going right at him, right on the plane. And he's like, and I swear to God, to his credit, I could just see the light bulb go off in his head. And he's like, whoa. He goes, yeah, okay. He goes, now I get it. And we started talking, right? And he started asking me some questions, and I started talking. Right? Took up the whole flight. We got there. He gets up. He hands me his card. He goes, I'm sorry about the way that started, but I meet so many jack-offs on airplanes, right? And I'm like feeling good about myself. And I look back at the guy who's been through the whole thing, never said a word. He looks at me and he shakes his head. He goes, that was awesome. So that was my Penn Jillette story. He later invited me on his show, Bullshit. And I did something there. They asked me to make odds on something. That's and he was awesome. Very cool. I later saw him again and other social things. Met his wife. Oh, wow. Told her the story. So not that he and I were buzzing, hung out, but I did get to do
it. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Vegas in general. What's new that people might not be aware of?
The new stuff is Fountain Blue and Durango. You know, I mean, those two places, they're the first casinos to open really in a couple of years. They're both beautiful. You know, Durango is typical station stuff, but not as good. I mean, you know, station has been tightening up in everything. By the way, somebody gave me a few sheets of paper that they're handing out to the dealers at Station to teach them to count cards.
Really?
Yeah. Station is they're bad, man. Wow. They're bad news. I'll get to that in a minute. Durango, absolutely gorgeous place. Just beautiful. The food court is fantastic. They got some really good restaurants in there. Shang Artisan Noodle, one of the best Chinese places in town. There's one in Flamingo. They opened one there. The games, though, it's the worst set of video poker rules I've seen at a Station casino in history. The best they have there is 8-5 bonus poker. You know, they don't have a single thing over 99.2%, which sounds good. But for a Station, that's not really so great. But back anyway, you know, I looked. I said, can you give me those sheets? Let me take a look at it. Pretty dumb.
Yeah.
Pretty dumb. You know what they gave? First of all, they explain the edges and all of that the counters can get, and they were like way off. They were way, way inflated. You know, second, they talked about bet spread necessary and things that was inflated and wrong. Then what they told them to learn was there was no emphasis on learning basic strategy. They mentioned basic strategy and says you need to know it. And then they gave them a list of the illustrious 18 with strike changes, you know, for high-low and said, this is what you need to recognize when they change at these numbers. I'm like, come on. That's just dumb.
Yeah.
You know, but
there's no way a dealer can deal well. I mean, honestly, they're probably making more payout mistakes trying to keep a running count and look for deviations.
And they're supposed to represent they're supposed to be happy and friendly. You know, they're supposed to represent the casino. I mean, they do a lot better teaching their dealers to smile and be friendly and let somebody else, let the eye in the sky do their job.
And what about the other one, Fountain Blue? Or
Fountain Blue, they don't know what they want to be when they grow up. You know what I mean? I don't know what growing up for them is going to be, making it through a year maybe. I don't know. It's just one of the most beautiful places you've ever seen. It's gorgeous. But there's nobody playing there. Their games are lousy. They've got some reasonable games in the high limit room at $500 minimums. So, you know, they're not going to get the general public on that. Everything's 6-5 out in the pit with, you know, the regular games. They only have one bar with video poker. They've got 36 bars and restaurants there. I don't know how many of them are bars, probably half of them to 20 or so. And only one, which is a sportsbook bar, has even a video poker, you know, tabletops.
Wow.
So our bar tops. They just don't know what they want to be. They want to be a fancy hotel. They don't want to be a casino. You know, they don't want to be a casino with a lot of good amenities. They want to be a fancy hotel with a casino. And that's what they're going to end up being.
At least Durango, because it's, you know, off strip, maybe it's more for locals. Mm-hmm. I've played in there, you know, blackjack games good.
Yeah, decent from what I saw.
Yeah, and it is nice.
Yeah, I don't know how sweaty they are or anything. You would comment on that.
No comment, but Fountain Blue, I'm not even going to bother checking it out because Everything I hear is that the games are terrible.
Well, they are on the floor. Like I said, they got some good games in High Limit. They got some 0.2, 0.3 percenters in there.
Yeah.
So they got some decent games. So if you got that kind of bankroll and, you know, you can play through that, then you got some good games there.
Have to get a big boy bankroll together to play some $500 minimums. Yeah, it's been a while since I've played those stakes.
That's right. But, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, the thing that I'm loving right now, you know, across the street somewhat from Fountain Blue is you got the old Lots of Fun is back. They put in table games there. They're terrible. You know, crummy rolls and all eight deckers, 6 to 5, that kind of thing. But at the bar, they've got $2. They got like a $2 thing at the bar, $2 beers. Heineken, $2 Heineken. Now, that's where I used to go. Peter Griffin would come to town, you know, the mathematician theory of blackjack. And Peter would call me up and we would either go to the Horseshoe or we would go to Slots of Fun for 50 cent Heinekens. And we would sit at the bar and do that. So it was nostalgic for me to go there and get a $2 Heineken, which is a big deal this year.
Yeah.
I mean, in these times, but also $2 hot dogs, $2 shrimp cocktail, all at the bar 24/7. And this won't affect a lot of people, but old coin dropper machines. So people who want to play slot machines, when here are the coins, they don't get the Tito tickets. They put that in. So they're going for the nostalgia thing, which I think is cool.
I
like that. You know.
That's the first casino I ever walked into when I came to Vegas for the first time.
Really?
Yeah. Walked in there and my buddy that he was on my first blackjack team, he's like, oh yeah. You spread to green here and you're going to get backed off.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it was a dollar foot long hot dog. Mm-hmm. Took one bite, threw it away.
Oh, man. I ate it all. When I was running around, I mean, this is when you were probably still in grade school or something, when I was running around there and I'd go get the dollar foot long and that was breakfast and lunch.
I can imagine. I don't know if you heard that this came out on April 1st, all MGMs are getting rid of 6 to 5 and free parking again. And then it turns out it was an April Fool's joke.
Oh, God, I was going to say baloney. Yeah, I just clocked the April 1 there that you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be, sure. That ain't ever going to happen, man. I guarantee it.
When a friend told me about it, he didn't say the April 1st part. He just starts telling me and I started getting a little bit like, really? Really? They're rolling back the 6 to 5? No, April Fool's.
Yeah. That one I would have caught on to right away. I'd say there's absolutely no chance on earth with those guys.
Any other casinos that they plan on opening in the next year or two?
It's going to be a while, you know, and it's going to be the next one that might open will be this one they call Dream. It sounds to me like another Fountain Blue, to be honest, though. It's, you know, Dream is a hotelier brand. That is a more upscale brand out of LA and other area in New York, and I believe. And they have bought land and they've gotten, you know, all of their go-aheads and everything else from the counties and everything. But I don't know about that one. I think if I had to pick one that for sure was going to be, it's going to be the Fertitta one on Harmon, you know, like sort of at the south end of the strip. So that's the same Fertitta who owns the Golden Nugget downtown, not the Fertitta brothers from Station Casino, their cousin, Tillman Fertitta. So as far as things changing, going back, you know, to the good ways, it's going to be a tough thing. Yeah. I mean, they tried to do it at Downtown Grand. They put in those, you know, the $25 mini tournaments, both blackjack and video poker. They've got the $2 hot dog and beer down there right now. That's still there, but the mini tournaments have been stopped.
Hmm.
The guy who did all that has left.
Okay.
You know, they went back to the pencil pushers, and the pencil pushers are slowly taking it back to the shithole that it was, you know, and it's going back in that direction.
I should have asked you, but the Fountain Blue, who owns it? Is it owned by a chain?
It's the guy who owns, the New York guy who owns the one down in Miami.
Okay.
Stoffer is his name or something. Stoffer.
Okay.
I think it's Sofer, S-O-F-F-E-R or something like that. He was the one who originally started it. He lost it, you know, in all the bad financial times. It went to, you know, changed hands a couple of times. Carl Icahn had it for a while, and it came all the way, you know, around the circle back to him, and he bought it and acquired it back and opened it.
Okay.
I hear they're doing terribly. I hear they're doing very bad.
Wow. Interesting. Maybe they should put some decent games in there.
Well, yeah. Maybe they should be a gambler. Maybe it should be a casino.
Yeah.
You know, and some of these places shouldn't be so, you know, so worried that they've got to dig everything out of it. You know, and that's what happened at Downtown Grand, is they looked at margins. You know, nobody was ever in that place. All of a sudden, they had a bunch of people in that place. It was full. People were playing games. People were, you know, at the bars, really good video poker there for quarters. They have a progressive double-double game that's almost always at 100% or higher at the Furnace Bar. But they were giving good games, and so their margins were smaller. And all these guys looked at it, you know, the accountants looked at it and said, well, everyone else is holding this and we're holding this, so this is bad. No, it's not.
Yeah.
You're holding this of nothing.
Yeah.
You know, what's wrong with you people?
Yeah.
So and I just don't see it changing in Vegas anytime soon.
Yeah. When we went in for Penn and Teller, we walked through Rio on a Friday night at 8 p.m. and it's dead.
Yeah, but watch out for Rio. Rio's another, you know, that was actually where I was going to go next, is that if I was to look at anything that was going to be the next one to start doing better, I think the Rio has got it in their mind to do that.
Okay.
And that comes from them wanting to work with us with our member rewards for Las Vegas Advisor.
Okay.
And I mean, this deal that they gave us right now, first of all, their room rates there are low. They're very low. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're at like 45, 60 level. So they give us 30% off room rates and waiver of the resort fee.
That's a big deal.
$40 a night.
Yeah.
That resort fee is 42 bucks a night. So you're taking a 60, you know, and you're taking 20 bucks off that. So you got $40 or $42 or something and no resort fee.
Yeah.
It's a great place to stay.
Yeah.
And they're renovating everything there. They're putting in $365 million into the joint to renovate. So, yeah, don't sleep on the Rio or sleep on the Rio. You know? I mean, it's going to be a good play, or it is a good play already.
Have any casinos in Vegas changed hands as far as ownership in the last year?
I wouldn't say in the last year, but in the last couple of years, you know, like the main one being Hard Rock from Mirage to Hard Rock. And that's finally the transition there is starting to take place. They've announced the closing of Love, the Beatles show Love. That will close July 7th. And that really does signal, okay, we're in action. We're going to make the switch over. So Siegfried and Roy's, you know, Garden and Dolphin Habitat already closed. Love is going to close next. Next will be the Volcano will be shut down.
Wow.
And they'll start to build the hotel, guitar-shaped hotel. And that will be a switchover. They're trying to court locals here too, which means they might be open to any kind of subsets. You know, the Mirage run by the Seminole Indian tribe, you know, similar to the Palms being run by the Yamava people, right? San Manuel. They're used to dealing, you know, to giving a better gamble to their customers. Not that the Palms is all that great, but it's not bad. And I think we might see some good things at the Mirage.
Yeah, soon to be Hard Rock.
Yeah, when it's as it goes farther and farther to become the Hard Rock.
How's this change in ownership going to affect maybe if you've been trespassed at Mirage?
Great question. I honestly don't know. I've known of it happening both ways, where there's been a switchover. And somebody who has trespassed and the former owner is now fine. And others where they're like, no, under the priors, you were not allowed here, right? Now, I just talked just out of the blue. I talked to Bob Nersesian yesterday, and he made me aware, I missed this, that apparently there's a statute now that after 2 years, they expunge it, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's going on with trespass? I'm way behind the curve on this.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, for someone like me, it's really interesting.
Yeah, rev up the career again, right?
In any of the places that that it's like, do I really want to push it? You know, someone like Tommy Hyland, sure, he'll
say, Tommy, you never cared.
He would say, we were at dinner the other night, and a friend said, how many times have you been trespassed there? I don't want to say the name of the property. And he's like, oh, 20.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Tommy doesn't care. He'll go right in there, and they'll come up and say, aren't you not allowed here? And you'd be going, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Get up and leave.
Well, then why do you keep inviting me back
via email? Right. Tommy has no fear. I mean, I'll tell you what. You should get Tommy Hyland shirts that just say no fear. I mean, you don't care.
But for those of us that have been more cautious about somewhere we've been trespassed, 2 years and it's expunged.
I've not really been trespassed. I've never been trespassed, to be honest with you.
Wow.
I've been told not to play. I've been backed off, you know, many, many times. Never been trespassed. So I can go in anywhere. And a few times I've tried to play, I'll tell you, it blows up real fast. I mean, no matter what I'm doing, if I'm just screwing around. And I mean, I'm telling you, one time it was New Year's Eve or at the Orleans, I don't mind saying it. And it's like 20 minutes to New Year's Eve. And for some reason, there were a bunch of guys I knew there. You know, there were players who were pros. And they're like, everyone's having beers and you know, whatever. They go, let's go sit down, let's go play. I go, guys, I'm hot. They're like, you ain't nothing. It's fine. Let's go play. I go, come on. They go, look, we're going to play low. We're going to take it easy, right? So we go, we sit down, everyone's playing nickels. And it's a double deck, and it just goes sky high. It just goes through the roof. And all of a sudden, here come hundreds, right? Just out of thin air, right? The hundreds are coming down on the table, including me, right? And I look up and I see a pit boss, and it's like a slow motion movie where he starts running towards the table, right? And before the dealer deals, he almost dives onto the table, pushes my chips out of the circle and goes, no action. And everyone stops. No, this guy's a pro. This guy's a pro. This guy's a pro. I go, what about them? He goes, they're okay.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, sky high, $100 bet. It's like $3 of EV, and he's about to dive
across the pit. I know. And everybody's trying to have restraint. You know, I mean, well, we all bought in for like $40.
Yeah.
So everyone's reaching in their pocket. This is all paper.
Yeah.
Right? It's all paper coming out on the table. But yeah, and it's only me.
Yep.
Right? Like I'm some sort of ATM machine or something. You know, and just pull it out or something. Yeah, I'm like, these guys are better than me. What are you talking about?
You got to be the most well-known AP, former AP in Vegas.
Too much TV, man. Too much TV.
Hey, what about the baseball stadium? So Tropicana, it's already shut down. It's getting blown up, and they're going to build the Las Vegas Athletics stadium there. How do you think that's going to affect the Strip?
Oh, I think it's going to be gross, man. It's going to be gross because of the traffic.
That's what I was thinking. I looked it up. It's about 30,000 people on average attend a baseball game.
Yeah. Well, what about when they have overlap? What about when they've got, I don't know how much the Raiders and the Knights, and, you know, football, hockey, and baseball are going to overlap. There's going to be some overlap. But what about concerts? And what about all the different things? And I mean, it's maddening to try to go through the south end of the Strip when there's anything happening at T-Mobile or Allegiant or, God forbid, both. Now, what about when you get all of them in action? It's ridiculous. And I don't really know why they did it. I mean, certainly certain financial things and all of that. They were going to do it at the Rio. Oh, that would have been great. You know, it's like right across the street from my office. I would have walked over to see a game and property values and everything else. But it didn't happen. I'll tell you what I did do, the Tropicana thing. We can get into this a little bit. We had a deal with the Tropicana, me and Mike Aponte. All right, you know Mike?
Yep.
They call him MIT Mike, right?
Yep.
He was from the movie 21 and from Bringing Down the House. He was Frasier in the book. And, you know, he was like a team leader there. And Mike and I have been working for about a year on an invitational world championship of blackjack. And we had a deal. We had a deal with the Trop. And they were going to air it there. We had a TV deal, a streaming deal with Tubi. And everyone goes, Tubi, well, Tubi, 64 million subscribers. We had it. And then they contacted us and said, we got to do it in 6 weeks or we can't do it because we're gonna close.
Wow.
So it got shut down. But we're now in discussions with Circa. And I'm not saying it's going to happen there, but it could happen there. And it would probably start as an invitational. We would bring in the best players in the world to play. And then the idea is to ramp it up into a World Series type thing where people of poker, where people can buy in and try to become, you know, the world champion of blackjack.
So it'd be a blackjack tournament, an invite-only blackjack tournament.
As of now, we don't know. We don't know what Circa wants to do, and even if Circa is going to partner with us.
People can watch the YouTube video we did with you on blackjack tournament strategy and see if they can get themselves invited.
I'm telling you, Colin, that video we did is excellent. It really is. And I'm not saying because I was the one giving the advice, but you asked all the right questions in all the right order. And I've watched that through again, and I'm like, anybody who wants to learn how to do it and where to go for more information needs to watch your video.
Ah, thanks.
It's really, really good. Now, we just did on our YouTube channel, Las Vegas Advisor YouTube, our current one that is up right now. Now, I know when this airs, that'll be long gone, but we talked about they had a final tournament when they ended the minis at Downtown Grand. They had a final tournament where they put up $4,000 for a $25 entry fee. It was a big old overlay. And it was like their major tournament. It wasn't really a major tournament with only $4,000 in prize money. But I won it.
Nice.
But what was interesting about it was I played four rounds. And all four rounds, I drew the worst betting position on the end. I drew first bet on the end all four times. And so what do? You alter your game, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of betting one chip, you're betting six chips, seven chips, that sort of thing. We talk about strategy there and a lot of the stuff that we talked about in your video. And what happened was I complained. I lost in the first round and I went to rebuy. So I played a first round, advanced in rebuy, went to semis, advanced, went to finals and won. All four of those rounds, I had to bet first on the last hand. And when I lost in the first round, it was because somebody drew a blackjack on the last hand, which pays 2-1 in this tournament. And I was aced out when that happened. And I started whining about it like a big baby. right? And somebody heard my whining up in the heavens. And for the rest of that thing, you know, the heavens opened up and it rained down cards on me for the rest of this whole tournament. And what happened was, because I had altered my play, because where I knew I was going to bet, I wasn't betting one and two. I was betting six and seven and more. And at one point, I got three snappers in a row, three blackjacks straight.
Wow.
Right? And then another point, it's me and a guy heads up to advance, only one advance, and we're heads up. He's got the max and I got the max. I'm slightly ahead of him. I'm trying to stay ahead of him. He gets an ace. I get a 10. I'm like, no. Boom. He gets hit with a 10. I go, I've had it. I'm screwed, right? Boom. I get hit with an ace.
Wow.
I was like, you know.
Backdoor blackjack.
Yeah, buddy of mine screaming, ace from space. Right? Ace from space. But it all goes down to the whole idea that you play it properly based on the parameters, the variables, and then when things happen right, you win a tournament.
Yeah.
You know, so it's important. And your video shows that so well.
Thank you. So tell us what books you're working on at Huntington Press.
We're working on some really great ones, and I'm having a hard time staying up with them. You know, there's so many good ones. We just put out James Grosjean's Ultimate Report, which is, you know, basically it's basic strategies for all the carny games. Mm-hmm. Now he's got a second one called the Lockdown Edition. A Lockdown Edition is all about getting the money, essentially the whole carding. And this is going to be another Grosjean special. I mean, it's going to be a $500-$600 book.
Yeah.
And he's going to be, you know, directing the parade on that one. He's going to call the price. He's going to say who can get it and who can't. You know, the reason, you know, James, when he puts out a book, he only wants certain people to have it. You know, it's like, you know, Beyond Counting and CAA, certain people he wouldn't sell to. And same thing with the Lockdown Edition. He wants it only to go to people that he okays. He has his reasons for that. But I made a deal with him that the Basic Strategy book, which is just fabulous, and you get to read what Grosjean's all about, could sell to anybody. And it's on Amazon and everything else, so anyone can buy that book for, you know, $34.95 and see how that guy's mind works, which is really quite incredible.
Yeah.
And he's funny. He's a good writer, you know. The guy's a nuclear bomb, man. The guy's a nuclear bomb. He's just good at everything. But anyway, so we've got this one coming out from Grosjean. It would have been ready months ago, except he said, I've done more coding. He goes, I've got some updates. I've made it better. So I'm waiting on that from him. We've got one called The Advantage Players. It's from Michael Kaplan, who does all the, he writes for the Cigar Aficionado.
He told me about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. It's, you know, it's, I hate to call it a column collection. It sort of is, but we've tried to weave it together, you know, in a better way. So you're not just reading column after column. And it's not just about gambling. There's a lot of gambling in there, but it's all about other guys who do other things, including hackers, which was an interesting thing, which I had just finished editing that thing, that book, and the chapter about the hackers. So I had a different perspective on it when the MGM thing happened. And I mean, even one guy who cuts locks for a living, and I don't mean like cutting locks to get into buildings, I mean fish, and that he parlayed his ability to cut locks into advantage play and working at Sardell's in New York City. You know, John Chang is in there, cool. Mattress Mack,
yep.
You know, for what he's done. We took out a lot of the poker.
Okay.
We had a bunch of poker, and I said, you know what? A lot of these poker stories have been told before, and a lot of these poker guys, I don't see them as much as advantage players as just crazy savants who are just great at one thing and then blow all their money doing other things.
It's true that a lot of, I mean, I don't want to make a blanket statement, but there are quite a few poker players that blow their money at other things. They're just very, very good at poker.
I know. And I don't really see that as advantage play, you know? And so we pulled out a lot of poker. We've got Don Johnson.
Cool.
We've got James Grosjean, of course, and there's some stuff in there about Grosjean you've never read before.
Awesome.
So that'll be a very, very good read there. You know, Phil Ivey and the girl he worked with, you know, for that, Kelly Sun.
Yep.
Yeah, you're going to want to read this book. It's a good book.
Tell me about All About Sports Betting.
All About Sports Betting is Blair Rodman, who's currently the bane of my existence, editing this book because he's packed it with so much stuff. And it was supposed to be a beginner's book, and he wanted to make it like the sports betting reference book, encyclopedic, you know? And there's so much detail in it that there's almost too much detail. And I keep saying to him, we've already been over this, you know? And it's like, it's getting longer and longer and, you know, whatever and whatever. But for what he wants it to be, we had a pretty good idea on this one and how to make it more commercial. So there is a full chapter from Frank Betty, on some of his stuff with that is not even close to beginner stuff. I mean, it's like on teasers and things like that. So, I mean, every pro is going to have to read this because everyone wants to know what Frank knows. And then there's a chapter from me on tournaments, on contests. So there's Frank and me, and David Sklansky has contacted us and said he would like to contribute as well. So we may bring David into this. Cool. And it'll become this big, you know, kind of compendium, you know. One more, speaking of compendiums. It's been out of print for a long time, but it looks like we're going to bring out Wong's Professional Blackjack again. Nice. But not just as Professional Blackjack. We're folding in key chapters from Basic Blackjack and Blackjack Secrets. So all of a sudden, there's like a 500-page. You know, that was one of the books that I learned on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was one of the first five books that I read was Wong's Professional Blackjack. And I even started with the halves count until I realized I didn't want to do that. But it's going to be that classic book, which tells you everything you need to know. I mean, it pushes high-low more than anything, which is what you should be playing, you would agree. And but we're also going to have all the basic strategy information in there from Basic Blackjack and the Blackjack
Secrets. That's great. Yeah, that's what I started with, those two books, yep. Professional Blackjack and Basic Blackjack. Yeah.
You know, I started with a book that wasn't even properly parameterized, you know, How to Win at Blackjack by Epstein. And then I think the next book I read was probably Wong, probably Professional Blackjack, and on, you know, through Houston's book. And certainly early, I read Theory of Blackjack over and over and over again to understand the conceptual on that.
Any other books or projects you're working on that you want to let us know about?
Yeah, a couple other things we're doing is we're going to have more of the Bob Dancer strategy cards, but they're not going to be done by Bob Dancer. There's another guy named Phineas who is got together with Dancer, and Dancer and he worked together, and Dancer was involved and approved everything that was being done, but then decided he didn't want to do it anymore. Dancer's kind of pursuing other things now. So it's going to come from this guy, and it's going to be another six or seven strategy cards, including how to use them to estimate edge at progressives and things like that. And finally, one called Million Dollar Mechanic, which is about, it's written by one of the guys who infiltrated Molly's game.
Okay.
And was playing with Tobey Maguire and was a mechanic in that game.
Wow.
He's going to talk about all of it. And the forward hasn't been done yet, but supposedly the forward is going to be by Steve Forte.
Okay.
Who was Grossjean before Grossjean. So, yeah, I mean, they keep coming, man.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm as excited as hell, but I can't keep up with these guys. They keep bringing it, and I keep trying to stay up with them on the editing, and it's a tough thing. I was editing before I came here today,
Wow.
You know, and I'll be editing when I'm done. You know, it's just, but some good stuff.
And what about Las Vegas Advisor?
Advisor is, you know, going strong. It's, you know, that's the other, my day job, you know, my day job, work on the Advisor. Our play there is more coupons. We're going real hard into member rewards online, coupons that we can do that don't have to be printed and be in a book for the entire year. And we're doing a big, big push on those right now. We're going to have a lot of them soon. So, yeah, go to LasVegasAdvisor.com, check out what we got. I mean, the EV and the gambling coupons we have in the book alone was $704 this year.
Wow, that's awesome.
Good stuff.
I started with Professional Blackjack and Basic Blackjack. And then the next book I read was Burning the Tables in Las Vegas, which you published.
Oh, Burning.
Yeah.
Okay, you read Burning.
Oh, yeah. I was substitute teaching. I took the cover off because it was mostly private schools. So the kids would be doing study hall or whatever, these high school kids. And I'd be reading Burning the Tables in Las Vegas. And then, you know, on the days I didn't get called to substitute teach, I was in the casinos every day.
Oh, man. Okay, well, that's funny because where I started was with the ones I read, and then very quickly I read Turning the Tables.
Mm-hmm. Which that was right behind me on this bookshelf.
All about how to get the money. It wasn't teaching you how to count cards, it was teaching you how to get away with it, right?
Yeah.
You know, science and art, you know, and this was, the science was all the ones we read to learn how to count, and the art was getting away with it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got a good Ian Anderson story, if you want to hear it.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
Okay, so I got two. I'm going to tell you two, all right, if we got time. My first one is, when he contacted me about Burning the Tables, which came after, you know, all the updates of Turning, I was like, great. You know, one of my heroes, I get to publish Ian Anderson.
You know,
I've gotten to publish already. I've gotten to publish Griffin, you know, and I've gotten to publish all these other guys that I knew that I came up with, although not Wong. I didn't publish Wong. And Anderson and I had it all set and said he's coming to town and he wanted me to drop off the contract at his casino. And I said, well, we'll just meet. And we'll sign the contract. He goes, oh, no, we're not going to meet. And I said, well, what do you mean we're not going to meet? I go, we're going to sign the contract. I go, I'm going to publish your book. He goes, no, we're not going to meet. He's just ferociously, you know, like secret, right? Doesn't want anybody to see him, know him, anything else. I said, if we're not meeting, I'm not publishing the book. I wanted to meet him.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, I was friends with Griffin, friends with Wong. I want to meet Ian Anderson, right? Completely selfish on my part. You know, we go back and forth and he starts laughing. He goes, you wouldn't publish a book because I won't meet with you? I go, that's right. He goes, okay, we'll meet. So we did. And he signed that's the contract. Awesome. And then every time he came to town, we met every time. We had a beer and whatever.
Once you'd seen him.
Yeah. Now the cat's out of the bag.
That's right.
Okay, so here's the other one. He tells me a story. You know, he was famously, he didn't partner with anybody. You know, he was the opposite of you. You know, you're all about team. You're all about get them all together. We'll all play together. We'll share the risk. You know, it's better this way. He played with nobody. He played by himself. So he goes, one day he's playing in a casino and he sees Ken Houston in the casino. And Ken Houston comes over to his table and he gets up, Ian gets up and he moves to another table. And Ken Houston kind of meanders around again. And Ian, you know, moves away. So he goes, later that day, Ian Anderson gets into an elevator and Ken Houston gets into the elevator and the elevator doors close. And Ian looks at Ken Houston and Houston goes, oh, what's your game? He goes, you're a pretty good player. And Ian goes, get the fuck away from me. And Houston goes, what? He goes, get the fuck away from me. He goes, don't you ever come near me again. And the doors open, he left. And that was it.
Houston's toxic for his career.
Nothing to do with him. And that's the way.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
That's the way Ian was. You know what? A lot of people don't realize what an unbelievably great gambler he was.
Yeah.
You know, part of the computer group in sports, poker expert.
Wow.
Won several major poker tournaments under pseudonyms.
Wow.
Amazing guy.
So I want to go back to this idea of a big tournament. Any ideas that timeline or how people could learn more if they want to get into that?
Yeah, timeline, I'm not sure. It's going to be this year. If we're going to do something with Circa or another, I don't know if it will be an invitational only. I don't know if it'll be 25 people. I don't know if it'll be 50, 100. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to want to open it up to the public right away. But I think that if this were to happen, the timeline would be probably invitational at some time this year and probably public tournaments before the end of the year.
That would be awesome.
Leading into the next year. In terms of what people should do to be a part of it or anything, you know, just pay attention to the news, you know, watch LVA and things like that. And we'll keep you abreast of what it is, what's going on. Meanwhile, I'm going to go back to your video. I say start with your video. I actually had a guy contact me, a Mattress Mac attorney, the guy who got me together with Mac, and he was in town. He said, I'm about to play a tournament tomorrow. What should I do? And I sent him a link to your video. I said, watch this video.
Awesome.
I said, you're going to get everything you need to start, right, and go from there. One more thing I would like to say, what's cool about this, what's great about this, is that essentially the cream will rise over time. But in a blackjack tournament, anyone can win. It's not like poker. In a poker tournament, anyone can't win. I mean, if you're a rube, you cannot win. I mean, if you're a kind of a good player, you can get lucky and get close or maybe pull it off. You know, a good example of that would be Moneymaker, mm-hmm. who was a good enough player, but he was no rube.
Yeah.
But in blackjack, anybody can win because it's such a small, finite number of hands. If you get lucky, you know, you get hit with a deck, as they say in poker, you get hit with a deck, you can win a blackjack tournament.
For more on tournament blackjack strategy with Anthony Curtis, check out this video. For more from Anthony Curtis and Las Vegas Advisor, check out the Las Vegas Advisor YouTube channel and check out LasVegasAdvisor.com.